Welcome to the Citizen Church Podcast. We're honored that you joined us today. We hope you enjoy this episode and leave challenged and inspired.
Well, we are in part three of our four-part series on our podcast based off of your book and the sermon series we're in right now, A Matter of Time. And if you're listening or watching and haven't bought the book yet, let me tell you, it's amazing. We are getting so much great feedback from it, Dad. Everybody I talk to that's read it is loving it, and people are buying it. I'm seeing posts from people all over the country, all over the world. I know you're excited, but what you're most excited about and what I'm most excited about is the fact that it's really helping people. People are lost on the subject of family, and we appreciate it so much, you taking the time to do this. And so the title of this episode today is Honor the Lost Trait, all about honor. And so when you think about honor, Dad, this last week in your sermon, you opened up your sermon by asking the question to the crowd, who do you remember the most from your past? And then you followed up with that. We all remember the people who honored us the most, the people that believed in us when no one else did, the people who valued us. Why don't you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, it's interesting because you think about all of these famous people that we watch and that we are, amazed by, what they accomplish and do in life. But it doesn't take long to forget their names.
Right.
And the people that you never forget are the people that believed in you when no one else did. For instance, when you were in school, it may have been a coach. It was a teacher that believed in you, that inspired you, helped you. You'll never forget that teacher's name. You know, I have a couple of those in my life. The person that led you to Christ.
Right.
I remember the lady that led me to Christ. I was in children's church, 5 years of age. I remember the morning in great detail. Her name was June, and I'll never forget her name.
Wow.
And because what she did, she served me, she honored me by serving. And the people that honor us, that invest in our lives, you'll never forget those people because it burns such a deep impression into our memory. That's what honor does.
Yeah, and you also talked about your parents, my grandparents growing up, and that culture of honor and believing in you and how they treated people. Why don't you speak a little bit about that too?
Growing up, I was tremendously blessed, and I always understand how valuable that is. For instance, whenever I was growing up, my dad, he got up every morning early and he fixed all of us breakfast. While my mom was getting ready, she was a school teacher, and she had to leave early because she had to drive so far to where our school was. But he invested in that every morning, sitting down, all of us had breakfast together around a small little table, and it was that moment of investment. What he was doing, he was serving us. My mom would come home every afternoon around 4 o'clock. Before my dad ever got off work, she always fixed a fabulous dinner. And every evening, all of us gathered around that small table. We had dinner together, spent that time together. But Dustin, this is what I remember, and it's that one little thing that stands out above anything else. So often after dinner, my dad would get up, and you can probably see him doing this. He would get up, and he would say, "Hey, everyone just sit right there. Mom, just sit there." He said, "Let's just talk." And he would go and stand at the sink. Our house was pretty small. And so he was at the sink. The table was right there. Yeah. We were still all together. And he was the fastest dishwasher I had ever seen. But what he wanted to do was he didn't want anybody to move. He just wanted to talk. And something about that just stands out to me.
Yeah.
Because what I understand and what I understood as a young boy as well is that he was interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to spend time with me. And what he was doing, he was serving his wife. He was serving us. He wanted us to sit while he did the dishes. And it was an act of honor. And I think that by seeing that, that helped me to begin to develop a heart of honor and what honor really looks like. And how do you operate in that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you is you treat, one of the things that people say about you all the time is how well you treat people. And it's something that I've always looked up to in you. And I was going to ask you, and you just spoke to it. Do you think that culture in your home when you were a little boy, because where we're going to go in the podcast in a few minutes is talking about authority and helping our kids understand how to treat authority, how to treat teachers, how to treat coaches, what's our response supposed to be. But it's those little things like you were just mentioning in the home early on that really start to plant those seeds of honor into our kids when they watch how parents treat each other, when they watch how the parents treat them, and how they value them. Because you actually define honor later on in your sermon. You define honor as treating people as special, treating people with value. And that's what your dad, my grandpa, was doing with
Absolutely.
You guys.
Absolutely. You know, this is what he would do. And a lot of people might say, wow, your dad spoiled you.
Yeah.
We were not spoiled. No. I spent the first 6 years of my life, and you think about this, five of us in an 800 square foot house, 800.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, it was tiny. Then we moved to what I thought was a mansion, 1500 square feet, where I lived until I was 18.
I remember that house.
And so we didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a lot of things, but my dad went out of his way, and I thought we were the most blessed family in the world.
Yeah.
And let me just tell you, you know, a couple of things that he would do. And again, people would say, wow, you know, spoiled. Well, not spoiled, but blessed. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, getting ready to go to school, those cold, cold winter mornings, a frost all over the window, deep ice or thick ice, mm-hmm. I would go out, and he had already scraped all of the ice off,
yeah.
started my car, warmed it up. I would walk out the door, get wow. into a warm car to drive to school. And I would drive to school thinking, why does he do that? Why does he do it? I can also remember, and this really stands out to me, that I had gone to maybe a retreat, a weekend retreat mm-hmm. with the church, or a week-long youth camp, and I would come home, being in high school, I had this old red car, and when I'd come home, he did this several times, he had detailed the car. When I drove in to the driveway, there my car was, it was red, it was sparkling. He had detailed it inside, outside, waxed all of the outside. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And I would think, why would he do that?
Yeah.
He's worked all week long, his day off, all the yard work, all that he had to do, and yet he took that time for me. You know, you can teach your kids or try to teach them honor by opening up a book, reading to them, telling them this is what honor is. That's not going to go very far.
No.
But when a parent begins to display that on a day-to-day basis, you begin to pick that up, and it's so attractive, and you know how it makes you feel, that you begin automatically just begin to honor people in that very same way.
Yeah, I mean, having honor is a posture. It's not trying to figure out all the little areas you have to honor people. I remember Grandpa, I know she did, but I don't ever have an image of Grandma washing dishes. It was Grandpa. In so many homes, people, I mean, if from especially older homes, mm-hmm. People have this traditional mindset of, well, you know, the woman's going to go in there and wash the dishes, and I know we can laugh at that, but that was never Grandpa.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, Grandpa lived to serve Grandma, and then you do the same thing, and you've taught us that. What you were saying about the cars, I started laughing because that's my memory of what you did for us. When it was freezing, there was ice on our windshield, I would go out there, and it was scraped. The car was warm. When I would come back and visit for college, before I went back to college, my car was detailed. It was full of gas and clean and shining, and I would wonder the same thing. Why is my dad doing that? And it's interesting because even if your kids don't understand honor in the moment, they will later on, because those are memories, like you said, that you never, ever,
well,
ever
it's
forget.
It's interesting that those little small acts
yeah.
that you think a dad would never think that his child would remember that
right.
is the very thing that will move on for generations to come.
Right.
People
yeah.
just follow what you see.
And I like what you said, too, because some people might have a little bit of a hang up with that, thinking that is spoiling them, but it's not. Because as much as you would do that with us when we would have a bad attitude, I forgot the exact phrase, but you would always say something like, I know the cure for a bad attitude. It's spelled W-O-R-K.
That's right.
And we would go out into the backyard and you would make up landscaping jobs for us. Until our attitude changed, we would be outside. And if we came back in and our attitude wasn't better, you'd be like, nope, W-O-R-K, until your attitude is better. We'd go back outside and work. But I think that's honor, though. It's that balance, and it's honoring your kids and teaching them through your actions how to honor people in return. And I think this is such an important subject and why you put it in the book, and maybe we can transition a little bit, because what we're seeing right now in society is a complete lack of honor in the home, a lack of honor for people in authority, whether it's a president, senators, congressmen, women, governors. Everyone feels like they have a right, and this is where it's tricky. And you mentioned this in your sermon, and to be honest, Dad, I thought that you navigated this so well on Sunday. And if you haven't listened or watched the sermon yet, please go to our YouTube channel. But when you're talking about authority with presidents and people in politics and stuff, there's a massive difference between disagreeing with someone and not just obeying everything they say, because we shouldn't. We shouldn't have to agree with what people in authority do or necessarily obey everything they say. But again, honor is a posture. It's not speaking evil about that person. It's really treating that person like Jesus would treat them. And what is devastating to me on social media right now, I think sometimes adults forget that they share social media with their own kids.
Yeah.
Their kids see their posts. I mean, there are Christians that are ripping apart politicians, not just disagreeing with them, ripping them apart, name calling, making fun, speaking evil. And what they're doing is with that same mouth, they're doing that. They're telling their kids at home to honor their teacher, to honor their coach, but those kids are watching their parents dishonor their authority at the same time they're telling the kids to honor their authority. What are your thoughts on that?
It really makes me sad,
yeah,
to watch what has happened in the last several years. This thought hit me yesterday, and let me see what you think about this. For several years, all we have heard is tolerance, tolerance, tolerance,
right.
Tolerance to people's lifestyle, tolerance to all the different religions, mm-hmm. Tolerance. What is interesting to me is that word in this last year seems to have vanished.
Yeah.
I don't hear anything about tolerance anymore.
I don't either, actually.
And now that you say it, I don't. Just yesterday.
Yeah.
I never hear anything about it.
Wow.
The reason why is because the culture shifted so fast, and
wow,
it shifted to cancel culture. You take tolerance, cancel culture,
they're opposites,
and they cannot coexist.
Wow.
And so it has absolutely vanished. Dustin, this is what alarms me, and I think that we as Christians need to really rise up and think about this. Rush Limbaugh just passed away with lung cancer. A polarizing man on the radio, mm-hmm. Loved by many, despised by many. But this is what was shocking to me. The comments on Facebook of saying, Rush Limbaugh, glad he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that he would have gotten cancer earlier so we would not have had his voice. That almost seems to be acceptable today.
Right.
And that has happened in a rapid pace,
yes,
because just a few years ago, that would have never been tolerated.
Right.
And now it seems to be tolerated. And so what that's doing is that is pushing us down the line very, very quickly to a very dangerous place of believing that that if someone says something that we don't like,
right,
then we just can just cancel them completely,
right,
and push them out. Instead of having this mindset that they have an opinion and it's okay for them to have an opinion,
mm-hmm.
and where we are able to coexist with opposite opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is alarming to see where we're moving and where we're shifting. You know, the foundation of honor is value. When you really look at it, it's valuing. What you value is what you honor.
Right.
A parent, they will honor their children because they value them.
Yeah.
Or a child will do the very same thing to a parent. And so it's this thing of where all of us have been created in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we need to sit back and really stop and think about this, is even the people that we learn to hate or despise, that they are created, formed,
right,
in God's image.
Right.
And so we value maybe not their stance, and we don't have to go along with what they're saying,
mm-hmm.
and highly disagree, but we respect what God has created, that eternal soul, that being that God created.
And this is what's so, it rubs people the wrong way, but that's what was so profound about Jesus. He rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah.
And if we really read what he says, it's radical. I mean, when Jesus is talking about loving your enemy, what he's saying is love and value the people you deem as evil. That's what he's saying. And what's happening is when we don't do that, what we're doing, and the reason why this is all about family, when we don't do that as adults, parents, grandparents, we are training the next generation to come up behind us to take what we're doing further. So the hate that we are operating in, the lack of honor that we are operating in, so many of us in our that are adults with kids, our kids are watching. And we can already see it. We can see it in the next generation and how, you know, vile a lot of the response is to politics and all these different things happening. And there's, you know, there's people that call themselves Christians on both sides of the aisle. And whoever the person, look at the election this year, whoever Joe Biden gets elected, he's the president. There are Christians that view him the same way there are Christians that view Donald Trump with the same level of dislike. And I think what's so interesting is that when Donald Trump was the president, we want to go there with politics. If you're listening, you don't like politics, it's fine. You can hang in there. But what's interesting is the people who despised and, I mean, called Donald Trump evil and evil and evil, there were Christians who were defending him that could not believe that there were people calling him evil. The same Christians that could not believe that other people were calling him evil are the same people now calling Joe Biden evil. And the problem is, whether they are evil or not, our response cannot be evil. And that's what people are forgetting. If we really want to be like Jesus, truly, then we have to learn what honor means. And whether you, the person who gets elected, is the person you voted for or not, you don't have to agree with them. You can try to vote them out of office next time. That's the beauty of our country. You can have freedom of speech, but you do not have the freedom to be evil and to not love your enemy. You have to in order to be Christ-like. And that trickles all the way down. And what's so important about this with our kids, and we can get back to that, is teachers, coaches, parents, and it's alarming now. How disrespected teachers are by kids in the classroom, the dishonor there, the dishonor with coaches, and it's just becoming more and more acceptable, and it all comes back to the home, teaching honor. And that's why I loved how you opened up with the story about grandpa honoring, because if we can model it for our kids, it's a game changer. We have to model it for our kids. Any thoughts on that before we transition?
Yeah, you know, growing up with children in the home, you know, I talked yesterday a little bit about obedience.
Yeah.
And obedience alone doesn't do it. I mean, obedience is great, teaching obedience, but you have to appeal to the heart. Mm-hmm. You have to go deeper than obedience, and that's what honor is. And it's really teaching kids how to treat others with love and with respect, and where, you know, name calling is never, never accepted in our homes. And I think it's one of the things that parents need to get a grip on, because it becomes commonplace. Everybody does it. And you know, we belittle and we agitate and we, you know, we poke at one another, you know, as children, and just creating this fury in the home. Right. You know, everyone's upset and everyone's mad because of the name calling. And we just stop it and we talk about, we're a family of honor. We never treat each other like that. You know, people may do that at school. You may see that all the time, but we don't do that here because we are a team. We love one another. We stand by one another. And, you know, you start saying that and you start emphasizing that, your children will come along and they'll begin to understand that. Again, they will mimic exactly what you say and what you do.
Yeah. I loved on Sunday when you said, of all the things to come down hard on, come down hard when there is name calling in the home. And one of the things Mandy and I promised our kids a long time ago is they will never hear either of us call each other a name.
That's right.
Never. And they never will. They never have and they never will. And that's what, even if you've slipped into that little bit of that as a parent or grandparent, just fix it now. Apologize and say it's never going to happen again, and don't let it happen again, because you're giving your kids license to do it if we're doing it.
Right.
But name calling, gosh, I mean, that is the most intense way to dishonor someone, by labeling them something differently than God labels them. And that's why it's so dangerous, because we have power with our words, we have naming power with our words, and we can shift people's identities with our words, good or bad. And it's a very dangerous thing. And I love that you said that. You defined obedience and honor as this in your sermon. You hit on this a little bit, but I'll read you the exact definitions you used. Obedience is an act of the will. It's doing what someone says right away. And I think it's a great definition for kids in the home. Obey right away. And then honor, you defined as an act of the heart, and you mentioned that. And it's treating people as special and with value. So I thought, and when I wrote this down in your sermon, I thought that was one of the most profound parts of your sermon. Obedience is an act of the will. I am choosing to obey even if I hate doing this thing. Honor is shifting from that to, it might start with an act of the will, but I am molding, allowing my heart to be molded to actually want to do this because I love the person asking me to do it. I value them, so I'm going to have a heart change and do it with a good heart. And you gave an example about dishwashing and stuff. Give that example.
Yeah, it's You know, if you're a family that has a schedule of where one of your kids does the dishes after dinner each night, the son, he does the dishes one night, the next night, it's the daughter's turn to do it. She's standing at the sink washing dishes. Her brother comes back behind her, and he's agitating her, and it's your night, not my night. And he's just really kind of jabbing her. Instead of doing that, whenever honor begins to sink in, and that it's about other people, it's not about me, it's where he might slip to the sink, even when it's not his night, tell his sister to scoot over, let me help you do the dishes tonight so we can be finished, so you can be finished faster, so then we can go watch TV together, we can play a game together, but I'm just going to help you tonight, even though it's not my night. What that is a shift in the heart. It is not about obligation. That's my responsibility, not my responsibility. It's about love. It's about respect. It's about investing in someone else. And wow, that is a turning point when you begin to see things like that. And when your kids take on that nature and they begin to practice that out and they begin to live that out, all of a sudden they elevate above everyone else their age and they will stand out in the crowd. Yeah. People will take notice of them.
Absolutely. Another statement you said, and it comes right off of what you're saying now, it says obedience can produce the right action, but not always the right attitude. Obedience can produce the right action, but not always the right attitude. And how you get the right attitude, because this is probably where people are asking, okay, but how do we go from obedience? How do we get there? Like, how do you get your kid to want to go help his, you know, their sister or brother at the dishes? Because no kid wants to do that. I mean, no human wants to do that. We view it as our chance to go sit and watch TV. But how do you produce that? And I think it's a long game approach and not a short game approach. It's understanding that it's going to take training. It's going to take time. But shifting the heart, going from the will to the heart, is a big deal. And that does not happen overnight. And I don't think parents or grandparents should be upset if it's taking a long time. You know, our kids are just like every other kid, you know, in the world. They do not naturally lean towards selflessness. No kid does.
No.
And so one of the things, a few days ago, we actually started, we started doing a nightly Devo with our kids. Every night we do a little Devo. The first week, oh my gosh. And I think you mentioned something like this in your sermon. When you first start something like this, they thought it was cheesy, rolling their eyes. They were, tortured. We had to do a nightly Devo. Oh my gosh, we want to watch TV. After about three or four nights, if like Mandy or I looked like we were forgetting about it, the kids would be like, what about the Devo? What about the Devo? Whether it was Avery, Aiden, Asher, or Aslan, they all now, this is no joke, no exaggeration, they cannot wait for it. They go right into the living room. They each have their spot on the couches. They sit there. And what we do now is Mandy found this like little website or something with 50 words. And there are scriptures and little comments for each word. And for the next 50 days, we started 2 days ago, we're going through a unique word that has to do with shifting the spirit or a heart of a child. And we look at the word, the scripture that goes with it, and we talk about why that word is necessary to succeed in your life practically and spiritually. Why would you have to have this trait to succeed? How is this going to impact a future marriage? How is it going to impact a future friendship? Why, like last night we did one and it was on alertness, being aware of things around you, being aware of potential friendships, potential traps around you. Why is that important? Why is it important to be aware of things around you? Avery, what does that mean to you? Why is it important? Aiden, what does that mean? And they're starting to understand the spirit of why we're having these expectations and not just, am I going to follow the rule? Or am I not? And we're really seeing a big shift. But it's a long game approach.
It's always long, and it always plays out through the parents.
Yeah,
and that's what is so important about moms and dads, you know, being the lead, being intentional, of always having the mindset that honor is one of the most important character traits that we can instill into our kids, and that you practice that every opportunity, gathering them. Really, honoring is nothing more than just respecting and loving and investing in one another. While when you honor and you establish that in your home, it brings peace in your home, serenity. But if you have if it's not an atmosphere of honor, then all of a sudden you find that it's turmoil. Man, people are agitated, frustrated, you know, they're jabbing each other, and it becomes a very bad environment. Yep. And so honor brings blessing into your home.
Yep, you wrote about this in your book too, and it was something, this is a very real example from just last week, but, you know, one of our kids, you know, with all the online schooling right now and stuff, it's so tough on them, of course, but it's no excuse to ever, you know, disrespect or dishonor honor a teacher. And one of our kids, you know, the teacher was assigning something and they did not want to do this assignment. They thought it was dumb. My teacher's dumb, blah, blah, blah. And the moment that came out of the mouth, my teacher's dumb, it was like, oh, no, 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 no. I didn't even have to look and investigate if what the teacher was doing was dumb. I didn't care at that point. I immediately jumped on the side of authority and said, don't you ever dishonor your teacher like that. No. If it's an assignment, you do it. It's not your job to figure out if that's dumb or not. It's your job to say, yes, ma'am. It's your job to say, yes, sir. We do not dishonor or disrespect authority. And I think some, and I learned that from you. I mean, when, if we came home and said, my teacher, it frustrated me so bad when I was younger, but I get it now. You always took the teacher's side. And I get it. Because initially, you sided with authority to teach us a lesson. And eventually, if the truth came out that I was randomly right about my teacher, which I don't think I ever was, but if it came out, I knew that you would shift back. But I never forgot the fact that if I came home complaining about my teachers or my coach, if I came home, you initially got on the side of authority, and I felt it. And I always remembered that. And that was one of the deepest things that was ingrained in me with now honoring authority, because as a child, I was expected to. We were not allowed to talk bad about coaches or teachers. And I thought that was big. You wrote about that in your book. Is there anything you want to hit on with that?
It's interesting to me how that the Bible spells out 10 people groups that we're to honor. It seems to take a lot of pain in laying this out of where there's clarity of who we are to honor. What you find is when you lay out all 10 people groups.
I have those in a second if you want me to read them.
Sure. Go ahead and read through those if you want to.
So yeah, you said in these in your sermon, and these all have scriptural support. I love that. Again, watch the message. You can see the scripture support. We honor one another. We honor parents. We honor children. We honor wives, husbands, the elderly, widows, elders and pastors, our bosses, and the emperor.
Okay, no one's left out. When you look at that, that incorporates every single person that we have an obligation biblically. It is a command to honor all people. You know, and I think by our nature, we would think, well, I'll honor people who deserve honor. You know, I will honor my father if he would deserve honor. And we always put that if in there, if. And there's no if.
Right.
There's no stipulation.
Gosh.
That you have to honor those that are in authority over us.
The if thing is so dangerous, and then we'll end with a final story in here that I love from your message. But the if thing is so dangerous because whenever you say, I'm going to honor if, okay, whatever is on the other side of that if is your own definition of worthiness, of honor. Mm-hmm. Because the moment the Bible isn't the definition of who we honor, and the moment the Bible is no longer the standard, and it's who we deem is honorable, that means honor, the definition of honor, is different for every single person, meaning no one will be honored. I can't decide who's honorable or not.
Right.
I can't decide that because it's on a whim. It's all based on my emotions. It's based on who I'm mad at and who I'm happy with. But when there's a standard, the Bible, those 10 areas of who we honor, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, it's just a period on the end of that statement, then my emotions, my anger, my joy, my happiness, my frustration has to be molded around the standard and not some standard I want to make up. And that's what's happening so much with politics and everything going on with the pandemic. Everyone's so mad about everything. We're saying that person shouldn't be honored and that person shouldn't be honored based on how I feel. And there's no universal standard unless people are actually willing to look at the word.
And we have to remember that we're not commanded to honor bad behavior.
No.
We are commanded to honor people.
Right.
Individuals.
That's so good.
Human life.
It's true.
Because of the value that is in all of us.
And it comes down to how you treat them.
Yeah.
You don't have to obey them, but how are you going to treat them?
Right.
You can't respond with evil for evil. So the last thing I want to hit on before we wrap up this episode is you mentioned a very tough part of the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus was talking about going the extra mile, carrying someone's burdens for another mile. And you gave the historical context on that. And I honestly never heard that before. And I thought it was really profound. Can you explain the context of that scripture and what it means for us in closing?
Yeah, Rome, they were conquering, great parts of the territory. You know, they were moving out, hundreds and hundreds of miles. When they were conquering territories, they were building road systems. Mm-hmm. They had 50,000 miles of road systems. It's where the old saying comes from, all roads lead to Rome.
Right.
And it was very, very true. Mm-hmm. Well, on their road systems, they had these stone markers and marked out every mile that you were traveling. They also had signage, how many miles to the next town. There was a Roman law that had been established that any citizen could ask a non-Roman citizen to carry their backpack, carry their load for 1 mile. Non-citizens despised it. They hated it. But it was a law. They had to follow that law. So on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addresses that. And he says, if someone asks you to carry their load for 1 mile, mm-hmm. carry it two. And when he made that statement, you know the people on the hillside that
right.
day were looking at one another, agitated by that, frustrated by that, because it was the very thing that was humiliating to them.
Yeah.
And he was saying, carry it 1 mile, which is your obligation. Carry it the second mile, and it becomes your miracle. Because it opens up doors, it opens up opportunity, it opens up conversation, because you are standing out of the crowd beyond anyone else, and people are intrigued by that. What Jesus wanted his followers to do is to stand out, mm-hmm. to live at such a different level, a higher level of loving people, that they're intrigued by it. They want to know, who are you? What are you doing? Why do you do what you do? And that's what honor is. He was teaching the deepest, highest level of honor, how we live our lives on a day-to-day basis.
And it's just scary how far society has gone from that, because that's out of Jesus's mouth. And people had such a hard time with that because they have to be responding thinking, but Jesus, you're telling us to go beyond obligation to bless our oppressors? You want to us to bless the people that are doing evil against us? And we don't like that today.
No, we don't.
We do not, nobody does. But the fact remains, if you want to look like Jesus and stand out from the world's way in the world system, it's in the extra mile. And I love that. I love the whole phrase, the extra mile, comes from that.
Yep.
And that's what we're supposed to be and who we're called to be as Christians. And when we go the extra mile as parents, grandparents, then we'll train our kids to go the extra mile. But it all starts with those small things in the home, like we talked about. Husbands honoring wives, wives honoring husbands, parents honoring children, grandparents honoring grandkids, people honoring peers, because our kids are watching. If we want to transform society, we have to transform our homes. Is there anything else you want to add today before we close out this episode?
No, I love this topic. When I studied this and was putting the chapter together, it was like a light came on. And I think in our homes, that whole concept that I just told of that story, going the second mile, if we could establish that as a principle of our home, we always go the second mile for other people. That is a great statement of honor, and it helps us to understand what it is.
Amazing, amazing. Well, thank you, Dad, so much for this episode as well. We're wrapping up the third one now. Next week, we'll be coming out with the fourth and final episode of this four-part series, A Matter of Time. One more time, if you have not bought the book yet, make sure you do that. You can go to galenwoodward.org. You can also go to our church website. We will make those available to you. And tune in next week for our fourth part of our series, A Matter of Time. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit subscribe and share it with your friends.